Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Wine Run Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week gave Michael Bublé and Noddy Holder cause for sleepless nights on the run-up to Christmas last year with their number one Christmas album, which trounced festive heavyweights like Mariah Carey and Dolly Parton. One is a musical theatre colossus, a Radio 2 DJ and multi-platinum selling recording artist. The other found fame as an unknown in Baz Luhrmann's La Bohème and Les Mis, and is Britain's most popular tenor. Huge stars in their own right together, they've become one of the music industry's biggest success stories. They first became friends after appearing together in a disastrous production of Kismet at the English National Opera, and many years later, in 2016, released their first album together, which went on to become the biggest selling album of the year. Their second album, Together Again, went to number one. Their third, Back Together, debuted at number two. And now they're back together again, on the road, touring. So let's dial them up. It's Michael Ball and Alfie Bow. Alfie Bow, Michael Ball, how the devil are you? And where the devil are you?
I'm in London. Where are you, Alf?
I'm in the US at the moment. I'm in Utah, sat underneath my little boy's bunk bed that I put up, and these are the Halloween lights. This is crazy.
I don't think I've ever felt more rock and roll than right now, talking to you under your son's bunk. So, how are you both? Well, how have you survived these absolutely crazy times?
Personally, yeah, I am. I'm physically well. Was lucky enough to be able to finally open Hairspray.
I know.
We postponed it.
How many times?
Four times we had to postpone it. We did the first one day of rehearsal before we went into lockdown, way back last March, 2 years ago, nearly.
It's like a whole year's just gone.
It's just gone. So we kept postponing. Finally, we opened in June. And finished 3 weeks ago, and it was great. So I'm having a little bit of a rest before I meet up with him. And I can't wait
to go back on the road together again.
That's right.
I have to say, Michael, I was sat, as one does, in the nail bar earlier today, having my nails done, next to a wonderful gentleman who was also getting his done. And we were talking about, he's an actor in musical theatre. And I said, I was speaking to you this afternoon. He said, please just say thank you. He said, he always makes sure everybody gets a decent whack I don't know. Are you some sort of Don Carliotti behind the scenes, making sure everyone gets little brown envelopes, as they should? But he also just said, just say thank you for speaking up, for pushing, for helping and using your voice.
Well, I think everyone in the business has done that. Alfie's done that. Everyone I know has. Because I've got my radio show, I on a Sunday, I was able to use that. But one thing, I'm sure Alf will agree, that this business, we in the music business, in the theatre business, in the TV business, have really pulled together to try and do everything that we can to support each other and to try and get work back out there for us.
Yeah, because it's all right when you're sat at the top of the pile. You can survive these lean times. But when you're not and you're relying on being constantly in work and work is shut for 18 months, that's tough.
Yeah, it's been hard to see a lot of young artists that have literally just left college as well to get into the industry, to immediately have to go back to working in a restaurant or whatever and do something else that has sort of put on what they love to do from the heart, has put it on hold. And it's really hard to see that.
So it's
been nice to sort of encourage people that we're getting through it and it's all going to be okay.
I was at the Royal Academy of Music yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Last year, students didn't get a graduation ceremony. This year, students, and they've had to learn not being in the same room together for some of the time and having to do things like we're doing these things on Zoom, which, you know, when Alfie studied, part of the joy was being
together,
and learning how to respond.
Yeah, it's not called a company for nothing, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. But hey, we're back.
We are.
You're back out on the road. I was looking back at how you guys met, and I wondered, because obviously it's been quite a journey since. You met on a disastrous production, which kind of bonded you. But here you are all these years on. And obviously when you came together, it was under professional circumstances. So before we kicked off the three questions that I've drafted for you, I wanted to know about your first impressions of each other, the one that you thought you had of each other before having met and worked together, and how that might have changed once you were, as you just said, Michael, in the room together.
Well, I didn't know Alf before we met in the rehearsal.
Yeah.
My first impression was, damn, younger, better looking, sings better, so I don't like him.
Hate him.
Well, yeah, I mean, my first, I'd never really heard of Michael Ball either, you know.
So. Yeah, right.
Were you living under a stone?
No, I just had a life.
And he's in denial.
Yeah. No, I have to admit, I had a couple of Michael Ball albums when I was a kid at home, you know, and we used to play them and scare away the neighbours, you know, that was that sort of thing.
Halloween special, yeah?
Yeah. But I was so excited to work with Michael when we did that awful, awful production. You know, my first impression was amazing professional guy he is. He was wonderful. It was a great lesson in how to be like a team leader. And he kept everybody together, you know, made everybody laugh, made everybody feel special. And I thought that's a real lesson to learn in this business. And so I try and, you know, that was what I try and do myself now a little bit.
Who are you?
Shut up.
What have you done?
Shut up. Just take the compliment.
I will. I'm really lovely.
I mean, I'm as stunned as you, Michael, because I've spent the last 48 hours reading up on both of you, both collectively and individually, and I've never heard a kind word exchanged about the other from either of you. So what have you done?
You know, it's
That's
not.
How
I've
roll.
Got to say, it's all for show. That it's not true. We love each other very much. I do. I you know, I have a lot of love and respect for Michael. It's all just an act.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't be nasty and bantery with people I don't like. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah.
I get all very polite. And one thing I'm never with Alfie is polite.
Or nice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Your second album, Together Again, which followed your number one album, Together, went straight in at number one. However, it was a narrow victory. You beat the Stereophonics by just 35 sales. So I wanted to know, where else in life have you gained a victory by the narrowest of margins? And what's it gone on to mean to you?
It's usually always involved the Stereophonics, unfortunately.
What?
Yeah. Oh my goodness, I don't know. Victories.
See, I can do the reverse. I've lost by the narrowest of margins.
Go on then, yeah, let's do that.
Eurovision Blooming Song Contest.
Well, look, I was... Oh, yes!
Yeah, came second by the narrowest of margins, leading up until the end, and then Blooming... I think it was Czechoslovakia, I can't remember who. Someone gave me nil point and gave Ireland 12 and beat. I lost.
You came second?
Yeah.
I forgot that.
And what about your number one, Michael?
I mean, you clearly haven't, Michael. How did that feel? Did you want it?
I was really drunk by the time the results.
Hanging off Terry Wogan like a chigaboo.
We were both absolutely smashed by that time. And thank goodness, because I probably couldn't have reprised the song. So I'm just, I don't know, have you... I can't think, can you?
I mean, what I'm talking about, like, is, for example, like, the role that you only found out after you'd stepped into the, you know, for example, like, Baz Luhrmann, right, spend 2 years looking for his leading man, and then Elfie, in you go, right? So that's quite a narrow victory for a total unknown, as an example.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Michael, for you, you know, being able to come back to work on Phantom, thinking that you might never work again. Those are, you know, that's a slither of an opportunity that felt just right for you at that time. And without it, things could have been so different.
Yeah, well, I think for both of us, you will always find something comes along and you're at a crossroads and you have a decision to make. And who knows what life would have been like if you'd gone down one path. But we've ended up going down this path. And for both of us, I think we're really lucky because... look where we are. We've done all right.
You've done more than that.
I was going to say, I think another sort of loss on my part. I've got two losses. I lost out to Hugh Jackman in the movie for Les Mis. And I also, which is even worse, lost a car race to Michael on the Grand Tour.
That's the word.
He thinks it was a full second. It wasn't. It was like...
No, it wasn't, Alf. It was 1.4 seconds. I watched it for...
All right, it was 1.4 seconds. I now owe him dinner because I lost. So that... And it hurts me. It hurts me. I'm heartbroken still. I mean, it's like, I find it hard to deal with.
But from a man that used to make cars and has, you know, this has got to hurt, Alf.
I know.
Your face when the news came out. I mean, you couldn't even hide it. It was, if he could have killed me, if we weren't the cameras, what he would have done.
I mean, yeah. Richard Hammond said you drive a car like you ride a motorbike. So I ride motorbikes more than I've raced bikes, more than I ride drive cars. And he said, you accelerate into the corner. So on a bike you do.
And it's lovely, actually, because when you watch it back, Al, you are...
I've never watched it back, Mike. Ever going to watch it back.
Michael, what you could do on the new tour is put it up on the screens.
Oh, yeah.
Just as the audience are coming in.
He's like so focused on it because he's competitive doing them, really. And I'm camply going, and I nailed it. That's all.
He did. And I still owe him dinner. I still haven't taken him for dinner.
So. No, you haven't.
I know, I will do, I promise. I'll come back.
Well done. And then obviously Hugh Jackman, was lightning ever going to strike twice in as much as you get like one of those unprecedented opportunities, which, you know, kind of what is what you had with La Boheme, with Baz Luhrmann, who just plucked you from nowhere.
Yeah.
And then obviously gave you a profile in the West End. But then they went with bloomin' Hugh Jackman. I mean, who's Hugh Jackman? When's he at home, eh?
Well, you know. I mean,
was he a great showman?
Well, then I watched the movie and I thought, no, he's good. He's pretty good. And that's the thing. I was so lucky to get the role of Les Miserables because there's so many wonderful guys out there that play Jean Valjean already that have pulled it out of the bag and do such a wonderful job and could have done an amazing job on the 25th anniversary. But
yeah,
I was fortunate enough and lucky to get that sort of win. In a
Those
sense.
Big moments.
And the Baz Luhrmann was good. Yeah, that was a good moment too, the La Boheme.
I mean, but when you get that call, because those are the moments on which careers pivot, right?
Yeah.
Baz Luhrmann goes, I want you. Like, where were you at in your career at that point?
Well, at that point, I was working at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. I was a junior principal at the Covent Garden on a sort of young artist program. And I'd literally just started it. And I had to then make the decision on whether I wanted to go and be on Broadway in a lead role in an opera with a movie director or stick to studying at the Royal Opera House. And I thought, and as it happened, the people that run the Opera House, they said, you know, it comes to a point in everyone's career where enough education is enough. You know, you go off and you do the job. And so they backed me. They were 100% behind me doing it. But the people that were running the program weren't very happy with me. But, you know, it was an opportunity I couldn't miss. You know, I had to go and do it. And I'm thrilled I did, you know, absolutely thrilled I did, you know. So, it was a good thing to do.
Did you ever have a moment even comparable to that, Michael, in terms of like, what? Big break, you know, like one of those that comes from nowhere and knocks you off your feet.
Well, yeah, I guess Les Mis would be it for me as well. Back in the day, I was doing, I'd landed my first big job pretty well out of drama school doing Pirates of Penzance. It's funny, this whole thing, you know, Alf worked with Doyley Carr. I was doing Gilbert Sullivan. I'm doing this show up in Manchester. And I heard everyone that was talking about this musical that the RSC were going to be putting on. And I was a bit obsessed with the RSC. My dad used to take me to see their shows when I was a kid. And he always said to me, if you ever got a job with the RSC, then I will consider you a huge success. That was the pinnacle for him.
That's so lovely.
I phoned my agent at the time and said, do you think I could be seen for this? And they went, there's no part for you in it. They were no longer...
I was going to say, this was from your agent? Jeez.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
But Bonnie Langford's agent, she was in the show, Bonnie Langford's agent, Barry Burnett, was up to see her, and he knew Cameron really well. And the only part that hadn't been cast, two parts, were the role of Fantine and the role of Marius. And he said to Cameron, I think you should come up and see this lad who's just starting off working with Bonnie. So Cameron schlepped up to Manchester to see me in the show and then brought me down to meet up with Trevor Nunn and Claude Michel and Alain and sat there. I remember them playing Empty Chairs at Empty Tables, which had the worst lyric. It made no sense, the lyric. And I had to sing this rubbish. but I knew the song, the music was great. And then remember Trevor Nunn coming up to me and saying, Now, if we were to offer you a non-singing role in this production, would you be happy? And genuine, I went, I don't do stage management. I've never done the course. I don't. But what do you mean? I said, well, I know it's a musical. It's through, you know, it's through. So I don't see where I would fit in. We sort of said that. And so that was a pivot completely for me. And then it was myself and Patty Lapone were the last cast in the production.
Can I just say one thing? You were with an agent that said that there was no role in Les Mis for you.
Yeah.
I was with an agent in New York when they were doing the revival on Broadway. And I said, can I go and audition for it? Can I give it a shot? And he said exactly the same. He said, there's no role in it for you, Alfie. There's no role in Les Miserables for you. You know, it's pointless going to do it. And then it was you, Michael, that got me the role.
What?
Yeah, Michael. When we were doing Kismet, Michael contacted Cameron and said, you've got to come and see this guy playing this role. I think he'd be good for the 25th anniversary. And so Cameron came to see Kismet, saw what a disaster the show was, but really liked my singing. You know,
be honest, Alf, that's why you came.
That's why you came.
Because he loves a bad show. And I said, you cannot miss this.
There you go. You wanted to see. Oh, I see now.
Two reasons. The show is possibly the worst bit of theatre you'll ever see and you'll love it.
Yeah.
And there's a guy in it called Alfie who's blooming brilliant.
Is that seriously? That was your sell to him?
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. Yeah. And then from that, he offered me, I did the same thing. I did the, went to an audition with Trevor Nunn and Claude Michel and Alan and Cameron was all there and they started to play Bring Him Home and things like that. And it was just, yeah, it was the same sort of process as Michael.
Wow.
Incredible. Yeah. Amazing.
Life-changing stuff for both of you then.
Yeah, I should have got 15%, shouldn't I? Of his... And he hasn't even bought dinner.
Well, you get to sing with me now. That's got to be a bonus, hasn't it? You get to sing with me now.
How many years passed between Kismet and you two going, oh, we could be the Ant and Dec of, you know, the West End. We could be the Robson and Jerome that can really sing.
Well, how long was it?
Was it 10 years or so?
Must have been.
Yeah, we did. We did. I went on as a guest for Michael on his proms concert at the Royal Albert Hall. That was the first time we actually duetted together.
Well, no, the Goldfishers, wasn't it? So I watched them the other night.
Yeah.
When I was on holiday, and we were having a little trip down. I was there with some mate, and we were having a little trip down memory lane, and I suddenly thought, God, what was the first time Alf and I sang together? And I found it on YouTube.
Aww.
It's really good, kid.
It was good, yeah. It was good.
It could have been a lot worse.
Well, I remember the first rehearsal that we had.
Oh, damn.
Michael turned up for the Pearlfishers duet, which is a duet written by Bizet. And it's a beautiful, beautiful French duet. And Michael started to do this mock sort of operatic voice thing.
Yeah.
And it was like, what are you doing? what the hell are you doing, Michael? And he says, well, it's an opera, isn't it? It's operatic. I've got to do that opera thing.
Guess which one of us isn't trained?
And so I just said to him, I said, look, you know what? Just sing it as Michael Ball. Sing it in your voice. And he did. And it sounded fabulous. And that was where we discovered how we can work together. So we the blend in the voices. And we spoke about doing a few shows together. And then it sort of fell by the wayside for about 5 years or so. And then we gave it another shot. And this was it.
I mean, when you stand back, I don't know if you truly appreciate how big your story's become. You are truly one of the music industry's biggest success stories in terms of sales. And your albums and your record sales together. I mean, you do great. Yeah. You have incredible careers independently. But there seems to be something that when you two come together, it just amplifies. There was nothing like you out there in terms of sales, standing, that audience loyalty. You bring both of your audiences to the party collectively. It's a pretty solid little empire you've got rocking along here, boys.
I think we knew that we would enjoy it. I think we knew that with our work ethic, the music that we liked, the music we found that would work together, that we'd enjoy it. Of course, you never know if something's going to succeed. If something, is going to capture people's imagination. And I think that's one of the reasons why it did, because it was truly an organic thing.
Yeah.
You know, it started off with us just saying, let's do some gigs together, some concerts, and see what happens. The record company found out and said, why don't you make a record? So we did, and it just mushroomed, that first tour. Do you remember, Elf?
It was incredible, because there was exciting news every single day. There was something coming in throughout the recording process of the first album. There was constant energy behind it. But what, you know, we have amazing fans. You know, that's what the beauty about this whole project is, that we have loyal and amazing fans, and we've brought a lot of people on board as well, which is nice. But one of the things that I think hit me hard about the whole project was how we sing together. You know, I mean, we work well together in the studio. We know each other's strengths, and you know who would be better singing this line, who'd be better doing that harmony, you know, that sort of thing. And it just worked. And there's no, I don't think now there's no like, well, I want to sing that line because it's big and it's loud and it's high or anything like that. You know, it's going to show me off to the best.
Well, if it's big and loud and high, you end up singing it.
Well, normally, you know, but you know, but it's interesting to have discovered our voices together a little bit more. You know, like some of the songs that I love to sing with Michael are the songs when I sing a lower harmony, when it's not a big, loud and high. It mellows things out, and it's beautiful.
It was discovering that thing. It's not you and me, it's we.
It's us, yeah.
It's whatever, and you know, whatever we do that will help an individual will help the two of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's very much a team.
I don't think we really knew that we would be now recording, you know, no. On our fourth album, no. Fifth album, and it's been a one. You know, it's, I want to keep going and do more, and because it's a lot of fun. We enjoy it. I enjoy it.
The other thing that I think we found is that when we finish a project for a bit, and then we go and do our own stuff, that's exciting then, where there's new things that we're each doing individually. And then when we come back, we go, it sort of adds to this.
It's keeping the relationship alive, isn't it? In so many ways, because you can come away from it and come back with new ideas, new enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
Always looking forward to it. Now, my next question to you both was based on my research, because as I've said at the top of the show, I found it very hard to find you ever being nice about one another in interviews. So I wanted to know if you could tell me two things. The thing you most admire about the other and the thing that absolutely infuriates you at the same time.
Far away.
No, you didn't need any time to think about it, Michael.
Shall I go first? Okay. I mean, the thing I admire about Michael, apart from his hair, is...
You've got a good thatch.
I know. Look at mine's terrible. It's awful.
No, it looks good. It's looking good.
No, it's not. It's just it's the bad camera angle at the moment. That's what I'm putting it down to. Thank you. Michael is so bubbly, so positive, so encouraging, is a good guy to have on your side when you're feeling a bit low, when you're feeling down. Aww. He's there always to give you a hug, throw his arm around you, all that sort of stuff. And he's so supportive. And, you know, that's a real blessing to have a partner that you work with that's like that, you know. The thing that annoys me the most about him are his superstitions. Oh, my goodness. I mean, he has pre-show rituals that he does. The whistling thing. He does this thing where I understand the concept behind it, but we're not sailors anymore and ships and things. There's this thing where in theatre, sailors used to be employed to work in theatres because they were able to rig scenery and that sort of thing. So they used to communicate by whistling. Is this right, Michael? Am I telling the story correctly? And so that would that would sort of tell the sailors to tell the crew to sort of bring in a piece of scenery. So if you're in the theatre now and you whistle, it's bad luck because you're given the cue for a piece of scenery to come in. So if you whistle, you could be bringing in a piece of scenery at the wrong time, and it could land on your head or whatever it is. So Michael,
it kills actors.
It kills actors, apparently. So Michael has this thing. He'll be surrounded. I find it really embarrassing because we could go into a situation where we're in a theatre and we're having a photo shoot or doing a music video or whatever, and we're surrounded by complete strangers that we've not worked before. And one young little kid or something will start whistling, and Michael will say, "Stop whistling! Stop whistling!"
But it's, I can't help it.
And it's like, what the hell, Michael? Come on, mate. He's 12 years old. He's just whistling a song he's writing to death now.
It doesn't matter.
No,
the boy needs to know. You've seen me. And it's not like it's a control. It literally, I can hear it. Anywhere in the theatre.
Anywhere in the building.
And it has a physical effect on me, and they have to stop.
And it drives you to a rage. You have you will angrily shut it down.
I make people go out the door, turn around three times, spit, swear, knock and ask to come back in.
No.
I've had to do that. And can I say it's actually put me into a position now in my life where I can be walking around my own home just about to whistle. And it's like, I wonder if I'm allowed to.
Own man.
Yeah, I can whistle. It's fine.
My favourite, Kate, my favourite. We've been in a dressing room to wind me up. He'll come in and he'll whistle. You go, you know, doing that. And I go, up to you, Elf. Do you want to tempt that fate? You want to go there? You carry on. And he'll sit there going, oh, bloody hell. And then he'll go out, turn around three times.
So the spitting and the swearing and the spinning is a cancellation process?
Spit, swearing.
That's also a superstition.
That cancels out.
Yeah.
So it's like when you see one magpie.
Oh, yeah.
You have to pray for two. You know? So it's the same.
Yeah, same thing.
So the way to cancel out the bad luck is to count to 10. So this is what happened. And I think it's based on sound science.
So we know that the whistling has made you something of a, you know, well, I mean, this is someone who's feared as well as revered in the West End.
Respected, I think I'd like to say, right? And passing on these important traditions to the next generation.
Passing them down. So what is it that you like and admire about Elf, and what is it that drives you nuts about him?
Okay, I love his strength. I love the fact that I know he has got my back. If something happens, if I need something, if I'm not on something, if I don't see something, Alfie's on it. And he's not afraid to say it, and he will make sure I'm all right. There's no question of that. He has got my back. And that's the sign of a proper, proper friend. What drives me mad is that he eats for England and I put the weight on.
We've all got that friend that's just got the metabolism that you've always prayed for, yeah.
You bear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'll just have my third dinner of the evening, adding extra bleeding gravy that's on his right. And, you know, he comes out looking like Captain America.
Are you a big eater?
Great.
I am. I do eat a lot. I don't know why. It's just that I usually eat every couple of hours. But I go to the gym. I work out. I do.
Wow, there you go, Michael. How often are you in the gym?
I'm in the gym 6 times a week. So
6 times a year at least.
Slammed at that gym.
And because they have a really good vending machine.
It's not for you.
But... You know, it's not for me. I go through phases. I go through phases where I think, oh no, and I lose weight and I'm really dead. And then I stop work and I think, oh, well, I'm all right now. We're a month away from going it. I'm going, can I wear a caftan on stage? Is that an option?
I did have a meeting with our tour manager on the phone, and I said, you know what, can we try and get hotels with decent gyms, or can we get a hotel close to a gym? Because I really do want to drag Michael there. So we are going to the gym while we're on tour. Right. We are. We've got to.
Yeah, I will. All right. We'll be healthy on this tour.
We'll do it.
Oh, my God. You know what? This time next year, you're going to look like Bruno Tonioli.
Why would you even say that, Kate?
Because Bruno is ripped. He does this thing. Seriously, Michael, just Google it, right? You just think, Bruno in normal clothes. You go, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He is tanned and ripped like a bodybuilder.
But does it need a good iron?
No. That's me.
So, oh.
There's nothing worse, is there? When you go, who's let the air out of my skin?
No. True story. True story. I think Alf probably heard this already. But I was doing the 100th year anniversary at the Bradford Alhambra.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the second half act. The first half act, first half were different acts. And there was the Crankies were on. And so Jeanette Cranky is doing a thing. That's wee Jeanette. And then she runs into the green room to check into her Moira Anderson with inflatable boobs routine, and literally 3 feet away from me, strips off down to the bra and knickers.
Yeah.
Right in front of the, because you do in the theatre, and she looks at me, she goes, I know what you're thinking, it needs a damn good iron. And she wasn't wrong. That's why I love this business.
Now that takes me beautifully. That's the ultimate segue into my final question. Christmas is the time where we come together, gather around the table, we eat, we drink, we get merry, we share stories. And I want to know your favourite dinner party anecdote from your years in show business. A crowd pleaser that's been known to draw gasps and slacken jaws. A Christmas cracker of a story.
Mmm, awesome.
I know, Michael, we could just do 3 weeks with you.
My favourite was my final... final matinee on Phantom of the Opera, and it helps if you know the show or have seen the show or remember a bit about the show. I was playing Raoul, and traditionally the final matinee is where you play tricks on people.
Oh yeah.
So for example, the lady playing Carlotta is in an opera scene and they put a ring on one finger and a ring on the other, and then I put cheese wire between. So she's like, and then she's literally stuck like that. Then I came out of the lair for the final scene and I've got a rip down the arm with Raoul for Christine Forever. And I'd arranged for the very final moment for as the boat goes across in the background with me and Christine to have a big old false hairy chest, a great big medallion and a cornetto in my hand. And all I've got to do is sing, say the word and I will follow you. What I didn't know is a girl playing Christine swapped places with the other, with the alternate. And I looked down and I saw them in, and all I could see was the back. I could hear the voice, but the voice wasn't coming from the actress. And I looked down and it was someone with, I don't know who they were trying to do an impression of, but they had the blackest eyeliner and the biggest false eyelashes, buck teeth, a little moustache, and a little bit of a hairy chest. And I turned around with a dripping cornetto in my hand to hand it over, which I did. And I was laughing so much, all I could come out with was, hey, what are you? And they came back and they went, you could tell it was your last day. And I went, oh, no, was it bad? They went, the emotion in that last scene.
Style it out. Style it out. No, what about you, Elf?
Oh, my goodness. Christmas stories. This is, I mean, not anything to do with the business at all, but I come from a large family. I've got like 5 sisters and 3 brothers. And one Christmas, my dad had spent like the few months prior to Christmas making this batch of wine, but he was doing like he did his home brew. It was a hobby of his to make wine, make beer, that sort of thing. He made this parsnip wine.
So it's like a moonshine, moonshine. So, is that what they call it?
Yeah, and so it was in what they call demijohns, where the alcohol is trying to cipher down, or it's trying to lower the alcohol content a little bit. But Christmas Day arrived, and there was this brew still in the demijohns, ready to, you know, ciphering and everything. And all the guys, all the lads, decided to go to the pub for a beer. And my mother was cooking Christmas dinner with all my sisters and saying, I can't stand this. So the fellas can just clear off to the pub and leave us to do this, to do this Christmas dinner on our own. They said, right, so open that wine. Let's get some glasses out. Let's open the wine. But they started drinking like 30% proof alcohol, you know, in like wine glasses, thinking like it was just regular 12% wine or whatever. So we came back to this smoke coming out of the kitchen window, laughter, music going like crazy around the house, my mother and my sisters rolling around on the kitchen floor, fire coming out of the oven, the turkey was burned, everything was like...
just totally smashed.
But it was one of the best Christmases we ever had.
That's brilliant.
Exactly, yeah. So that was really one of the best moments at home for me, you know. But like Michael, you know, leading up to Christmas in productions and things, there's all sorts of jokes that get played on you, and it's terrible. And trying to keep a straight face. When I was playing at the Royal Opera House, somebody bet me £100 if I would walk across the stage in this scene as John Wayne. So do a John Wayne walk right across the front, the Royal Opera House stage, in the middle of a production with George Shulte conducting. And it was like £100. Yeah, I'll do it. And so I did it. And somebody said, "Are you all right in that scene? Did you hurt yourself? Because you're walking with a bit of a limp." And it said, "That was my John Wayne impression." And that was another Christmas story.
Gentlemen, it's been lovely talking to you. Do you know what? I love your story. I love the fact that independently you have the most voracious careers, but collectively you really have become each other's cherry on the top.
Oh, bless you, Kate. Thank you. Thank you so
I'll
much.
I'll take Alfie's cherry anytime.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's up for grabs. It's up for grabs.
Don't worry. If you want more of that chat and song, you can catch these guys on tour. And don't forget to download the Christmas album. I promise you it will give you a really lovely welcome break from Slade, Bublé and Carey.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Kate.
Okay, that's it from us for this week. We'll be back next week with more great chat. Until then, White Wine Question Time is, as always, produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Gabriella Colasurdo and Richard Hatherop for Yahoo UK. Editing comes from Libby Knowles and music from Andy Bell. We'll be back next Friday with more great chat. Until then, take care out there and thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.